Hi, I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and you're on The Front Porch. I'm joined, as always, by Lori Lynn of the Charleston Daily Mail. Hey, Lori.
Hello.
And Rick Wilson, fresh back from Iceland with the American Friends Service Committee. How was Iceland?
It was great. I tried to bring you guys back some puffin fingers to eat, but they just wouldn't let me.
What's a puffin finger?
Puffin is like a bird that looks like a clown. It's an
they
aquatic
have fingers?
Bird.
Fingers?
No, you're... but you know, chickens don't either.
So. Oh, my God. Are they cutting off the fingers of these little puffins? Yeah. Why were you eating these?
I wasn't. There's certain Icelandic delicacies we didn't get around to eating, but I threatened to bring back for you guys.
Okay. Well, good to have you back, Rick. And today we're going to be talking about bidding. And how the state bids out projects. Does that sound exciting? Well, actually it is, because it's about one of the biggest fights in the legislature going on right now, the prevailing wage. Should the state have a set of wages that it requires for certain construction jobs that it bids out? You wrote about this in the Charleston Daily Mail, Lori. As of today, do we have a prevailing wage in West Virginia?
As of July 1st, the wage rates expired because there have been no wage rates set to replace them. Although the prevailing wage is the law, there are no rates. So as a practical matter, we don't have a prevailing wage. Probably won't until September, when the committee that is tasked with setting the wages comes back with the new wages.
So brief history for those of you who are not following this closely. The legislature back in January at one point was thinking about doing away with the prevailing wage entirely.
Right. That's been a Republican priority. That was on their wish list. And they wanted to – a bunch of the Republicans wanted to get rid of it entirely.
And there was a huge amount of protests among people that – workers that would be affected by this, and some contractors in West Virginia as well. And they came down to the Capitol. There was a compromise struck. And this compromise was that instead of doing away with the prevailing wage, the Tomlin administration was asked to do it differently, to do an analysis using lots of different sources, including federal data, including state data, and including this survey of contractors to come up with a number. And two things. The state hasn't come up with a number yet. It needs more time. Mm-hmm. And two, the way they were doing it was not the way that the legislature and the Republicans in the legislature wanted them to do it. And so the legislature didn't give them an extension. They don't have a survey done yet, and therefore no prevailing wage for a while. So Rick Wilson, why does it make sense for the state of West Virginia to say you must pay a painter or a construction worker X amount of money? Why is that a good thing?
Well, it sets basic standards for pay for public construction projects so that we don't get into bidding wars or race to the bottom where people can come in from anywhere with low-wage workers doing low-quality work.
So it makes sure that people are paid a decent wage.
And to make sure to set a standard for public construction projects.
In other words,
so anyone who bids on a public project, they have to take the lowest bid, but it sets basic wage standards so that they don't compete. Maybe the best way to see how...
Isn't competition good? I don't get that.
Well, let's go back to how it started. In 1927, there was a public construction project in Long Island where this Alabama firm came up, and the workers lived in hovels, and they were paid really low to do this public construction project. And two Republican senators, Davis and Bacon, were upset about this, and they were the ones who thought that they should set up some kind of basic rules. Bacon said the workers on this job site were herded into this job. They were housed in shacks. They were paid a very low wage. And it seems to me the federal government should not engage in construction work in any state that undermined the labor conditions and the labor wages paid in that state.
So this makes sure that you don't have fly-by-night construction companies coming in doing government work with really low wages and potentially shoddy workmanship. That's the argument.
And the other thing is, if you want these works to be done, you need people who are well-trained, who have gone through apprenticeship programs, who have the skills and the ability to carry out the work. And that's another thing that this helps ensure.
Lori, so what do you say to that? Don't you want to have well-paid workers and well-done construction projects?
Well, on the shoddiness point, I grew up in Virginia, which doesn't have a prevailing wage. There are 20 states in the country that don't have a prevailing wage. I went to school in Virginia. I drove on roads in Virginia. Our schools were great. They were well-constructed. They never crumbled, to my knowledge. Our roads were fine. Certainly compared to West Virginia, Virginia's roads are excellent. You know, Georgia doesn't have a prevailing wage, North Carolina, Florida. These aren't places that are known for having crumbling infrastructure and terrible roads. So obviously there are ways to ensure that you will have well-constructed buildings without this. So that just doesn't really do much for me, the argument about the shoddy construction.
What about the argument about making sure that the workers get a certain floor wage, so that we don't have really low wages on construction projects here?
Well, we have a minimum wage, right? That applies. That applies to everybody. You know, there's a great way to ensure that people get paid a fair wage, and that's the free market. A contractor has to pay enough to induce someone to come and work. And, you know, I continue to believe that the best way to determine what a fair wage is in a free market. Keep in mind also that, you know, when we talk about paying a fair wage, we are paying that wage. This is all state money. Working people pay taxes too. And I think they deserve to have their money spent carefully.
Yeah, why don't we trust the free market to do this, Rick? We trust the free market in lots of other ways. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think most people think there are limits to the market. There's not a free market in child pornography, for example, or human trafficking, or, you know, tanks.
Yeah, but come on.
There's a free market in, you know, food services. I mean, we don't go into Kroger and say, this is what bread is going to cost this week, and, you know, this is what you're going to pay for milk.
Right, but you can't bring cat meat in there and say it's beef either, because there are certain regulations in the market that, I mean, markets always occur within a set of rules. You know, the basic idea of this is to ensure that there's a level playing field, so that if there's a public construction project, a company from out of state or wherever can bid on it, so can a local company. They each have a shot at it. The low bidder gets it. They're required to, I think, in public works, but it ensures that they're not going to compete on the basis of cheapness. To me, this is a real sea change in West Virginia politics, because in the past, many political leaders at least pretended to care and say it was a good thing when working people have money in their pockets. Now the concern is that some working people have too much money in their pockets.
That raises another point, too, which is the political power. I mean, who benefits from this? Largely union workers. Unions are a very big constituency of the Democratic Party. You don't see this in the case of, you know, say, fast food workers. You see it in the case of the labor unions. And we sort of saw that with the whole controversy over the compromise and the lapse of the rates. There was union pressure brought to bear over how they were going to set these rates. And it's a politically connected group. We don't want people competing on price. Well, if you're a customer, that's exactly what you want. You want people competing on price. And we, the taxpayers, are the customers. So,
well, you can compete on price, but you got to remember that the actual labor cost in a public construction project is about 27%, according to the census. So most of the things that really drive up the cost of production on big projects are raw materials, equipment, renting stuff, administration, things like that. So
you said that you had some studies of surrounding states that don't have the prevailing wage and their construction costs.
Right. Some of them, like for school construction costs, if you compare West Virginia with some neighboring states, we're actually come under if you look per square foot for construction. So we're pretty much within the range or lower if you look at middle Atlantic states, including places like Virginia and North Carolina. So they're it doesn't really drive up, I think, the cost to the public taxpayers.
But again,
people who live and work in the communities pay taxes too.
I think if you really wanted to look at that, you would need to isolate labor costs from the rest of it. There are six or seven reasons why school construction costs in Virginia would be higher. The question isn't, are we higher or lower than Virginia or North Carolina? The question is, are we higher than we should be if our wages were being set in a free market?
Well, and that's a hard thing to know in advance, isn't it?
Sure.
I think there was a study that estimated that there'd be a cost savings from the WVU grad student. But then again, I think it's easy to pick that apart because you don't know. It's all based on your assumptions about what's going to happen next.
Well, the unions certainly think that wages would be lower without the prevailing wage. Otherwise, they wouldn't be fighting as hard as they are to keep it.
When this subject came up at the legislature, I think 100 contractors, that is businesses that do construction, mm-hmm. wrote in support of prevailing wage laws. I think maybe five or six wrote in weighing in against it. And it doesn't, these jobs don't necessarily go to union labor at all. It just sets the standard.
A standard that's going to cost somewhat more than without it, I assume.
Well,
this is the thing that no one.
Labor. There are a lot of things we can do if that's the goal, is to drive down the price of labor. That can bring back child labor. Let's just roll, you know, if you want to. But that wouldn't necessarily make this a better place to live.
I think the goal is not to have to drive down the price of labor so much as to have affordable construction projects. I mean, one question to ask is: are there things that aren't getting done because these projects are prohibitively expensive? The Daily Mail talked to Charleston Mayor Danny Jones earlier this year, and he said he's 100% for repealing prevailing wage, getting rid of it entirely. He said we could save $5 to $10 million on the Civic Center.
I would push Danny Jones back a little bit on that and say, where's that number coming from?
Let's see the data. Yeah, let's bring it out.
Is it possible that some of this work could end up going to out-of-state firms that end up employing illegal immigrants?
Sure, it's possible. But, you know, if that's your concern, if your concern is illegal immigrants being employed, I mean, there's certainly ways to tackle that. That is illegal, and there are ways to enforce that. I'm not sure the prevailing wage is really the best way to do that.
Rick, why should we have this special rule that applies mainly to construction workers?
I think it sets basic standards for quality, for training of the workforce, for the wages that are paid. One thing I think that's driving the controversy is that comparing people who do residential construction work with those who do public projects, and there's a different degree of skill and training to have someone replace an the engine of an attic fan in your house than to wire a school for electricity, put a roof on your barn versus driving a bridge that millions of people are going to drive over.
Is this the whole thing about the painter? You have some numbers about what people actually get paid under prevailing
wage. Oh, well, this was just an example. I mean, just to illustrate, you know, how specific these are, it's by county. There's an army of bureaucrats that's deciding, you know, which county. So if you're a painter in Lincoln County, you get $26.32 in your hourly wage, and also on top of that, another $14.17 in benefits. If you're an elevator mechanic in Kanawha County, $41.79 an hour, another $27 an hour in fringe benefits. So it's that specific. It's, you know, by job and by county.
And then the question is, what was the painter number again? Because that's been bantered about in the
$26.32 and $14 in benefits.
On one hand, that seems like a lot for a painter. On the other hand, if that painter is painting a bridge, for example, like my uncle-in-law, he was a bridge painter. He painted the Patrick Street Bridge at one point. It's a very dangerous job. If it's done incorrectly, it poisons the water.
Right. So maybe we should pay more for the bridge painter, and maybe we shouldn't pay as much for if he's, you know, painting the interior of a school. I mean, again, that would give you the flexibility to do that. Mm. Currently, Lincoln County has to pay both the same. These wages are probably too low in some cases. They're probably too high in most cases. But I'm sure there's some situations where people could actually make more.
So you're arguing not for – because right now the compromise was set the wages, but the Republicans want them set at what they consider to be a more reasonable level. But you're advocating let's just do away with the prevailing wage, right,
Lori? I think that would be ideal. I mean, the problem the Republicans have with the – is with the survey, the way they do it now. They're – single-digit response rates. There were all kinds of just weirdnesses in the way that the survey – and there are problems with BLS data too. You can't just use it straight up. You have to adjust it. But I think the feeling of the Republicans was, let's use this national data. It's going to be more reliable. And yes, the rates would probably be lower.
I mean, I think it's apples and oranges, once again, comparing residential with non-residential rates. So I think,
Well, they were going to take the residential rates out of BLS. There are ways to adjust the BLS so it doesn't include residential rate. I think that's a little bit of a red herring.
And I think the only valid way to do this, in a sense, is actually to do a survey. Now, I think Workforce West Virginia tried to do the survey in a different way, and that wasn't acceptable. The language of the bill says using BLS data and other relevant things, so it doesn't specify just using one. It's almost like that wasn't the predetermined answer we want to hear, therefore we're doing it. I have a sense this is going to be a political football that's going to play out for a good while.
And let's talk about the politics of this. I mean, in the middle of a gubernatorial race, this is going to be up in the legislature again. Senate President Bill Cole, who's been a major force behind this, is running for governor at the same time. Lori, what's this going to mean for the gubernatorial race and for the possible repeal in the next legislature?
There are now Republicans in the legislature who feel burned by this, and I think who were very much pro-compromise last time and are looking at this and saying that didn't work out so well. The other thing, I think it's a lesson for Republicans. You know, Rick, you're right. The language of the compromise is not as clear as it should have been if this was exactly what the Republicans wanted to do. It's a good lesson in get it in writing. Don't trust the handshake, because they felt like Workforce West Virginia was very much on board with them. And then a couple months later, Workforce comes back and it wasn't what they had thought they were going to get.
I think the Republicans wanted to have their cake and eat it too. They didn't want to have the controversy of repealing the prevailing wage, but they wanted to make sure that the wages were less expensive because they wanted to save the taxpayers' money. There's lots of distrust, by the way, between the Democratic administration and the Republican legislature on this. So what's your vision of a West Virginia? How does West Virginia change if we repeal the prevailing wage, Lori?
I think construction projects become cheaper. It becomes cheaper for a community to build a new school. And yes, there are some people who are going to get paid a little bit less, but also there are probably going to be some people who are working who weren't working before if we have more construction.
Rick, what changes if we repeal the prevailing wage?
I think any time you pull out the standards of working people, it helps to lower and help speed up that race to the bottom, which I'm afraid is the direction we're heading in. We're already seeing inequality grow dramatically. I don't stay up late at night worrying that working people have too much money or that working people are doing too well in this state. I think it's more the other way around.
Anything else either one of you wanted to make sure got said in this conversation?
Well, a biblical quote came to mind.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
we can't stop without the biblical quote.
That's right. What's our biblical quote of the week?
This is short. I mean, there's a whole parable about the rich man and Lazarus the beggar, which I'd be glad to expound at great length. But
I think our listeners know that.
The pullout would be there is a great gulf between us. I think on this one, there is a great gulf between us on that. And again, you can make West Virginia a really cheap place to live. I'm not sure that's the same as making it a good place to live.
How much does it cost to eat puffin fingers? Especially if you had to import them, I guess, it'd be really expensive.
Yeah, I think it's a no-no.
But you could have bought puffin fingers.
You could have eaten puffin there and minke whales and putrefied shark and sheep's head, apparently, is a delicacy, but we didn't get around to that. So little time.
But no whale, right?
Minke whale, yeah. Yeah, they had whale steaks, but...
Oh, well, that doesn't sound so bad.
Sounds terrible.
It's all disgusting. Why? Why would you go to Iceland? It was pretty, though, right?
It's like Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones all the time, everywhere you look. We couldn't figure out where they put the ugly Icelanders, though.
That's what I hear. Everyone's beautiful. Yeah.
And the weird thing, that is like the first new world, and it was settled, and there were no natives to exterminate or anything. The largest mammal was the Arctic fox. You know, it's really, everywhere you look, it's just overwhelming. After a while, it's like, yeah, another waterfall.
You know, All right.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Rick Wilson and Lori Lynn of the Charleston Daily Mail, for joining us. And thank you for listening.